I'm putting a moratorium on female writers writing about erections because I don't think they fundamentally understand the physics involved. Like, they have a middle school boy understanding of how erections work.
William, can you tell us how erections work?
Can you make a PowerPoint presentation, please?
No. My mother watches these.
Hi, guys, and welcome to another episode of your favorite podcast, Unresolved Textual Tension. It's me, your host, Maria, and today, with me, I have not only my handsome bitches, Katie and William, but we have a special guest, someone who back when we had like, what, 500 subs?
How many, something how like many? That.
So like 500
charity
subs.
Case.
Charity case. And guest starred on our podcast. And today, now that we're at like 11, almost 11,000, we have Amanda from Swell Entertainment.
Woo!
You could say we launched her, really. She's quite successful now, but it all started with that one podcast.
It has nothing to do at all with William being my editor and having enough blackmail material for probably 5 years minimum to get me on his podcast. Has nothing to do with that.
No feet yet, guys, but I'm working on it.
At the time that she did our podcast, she was at 250,000 subs, and now she, what are you at now, Amanda?
I think 440 something.
I'm just saying.
It's still charity work.
I don't want to claim causation, but correlation.
It was all of us together screaming about blue dicks. That's what really launched my channel. Fully.
Yes, it really was.
Is it a latch or is it like a lock or key? That was an important question about the spur that we have.
I still think it's like a rabbit thing, like one of those rabbit things.
I think the spur is mobile. I think it can move.
It can move a little bit. Yeah, it's a little prehensile.
I'm just saying, this woman had a fantasy and she went for it.
And that's going to be somewhat relevant to the book we're doing today, which is Butcher and Blackbird by... We never know the author.
Bryn Weaver. Okay, let's be respectful at least.
We knew that.
I know, we've gotten called off on that so many times now at this point.
So, Amanda, you had read this a few months ago, right?
Yeah, I listened to the audiobook a while ago because TikTok had talked about it. And I'm going to be honest, I don't hate this book. I don't love it. I don't hate it. It's a Hallmark rom-com with serial killers, and that's goofy, and I enjoy that.
So here's the thing, guys, you have to understand, is Amanda is one of my most prized clients. So despite that, though, we'll see if I still have her as a client by the end of this, because as everyone knows, I am unable to hide my opinion on things. So while her trauma may have gone back into the annals of history a little bit and it may have faded for her, I read this yesterday and so my trauma is anew. I think Katie is a little bit more on your side though, right, Katie?
Oh yeah, hardcore. Amanda, you called it so good. Hallmark is the perfect word for it. It's because like it's like a strange like tongue-in-cheek, I'm trying really hard to do this thing, and because it's like this dark humor, I'm getting like a little quirky humor. But then sometimes it takes itself a little too seriously, and I'm like, mm-hmm. All right, you said Blackbird too many times at this point. I really just need a breath of fresh air. So besides those moments, it's a romp.
There's like definitely screeching halt moments where you're like, oh, that's right. These people have trauma. It's like 2 seconds ago, they're flirting over a dead body, and now we're just like reliving childhood trauma and info dumping. And I'm like, oh, okay. I see what's happening here. So it's a little bit of a roller coaster, which I think was definitely the intention. But when you have it offset with like the tonally, it's all over the place.
Oh,
but
that's
also
the problem. Yeah.
The reason this did not, I think, scandalize me is the same way that like, I don't know if you guys ever did Den of Vipers on this podcast.
I've thought about it, but no.
You'll be shocked by how quickly you'll get through that book because it literally is written like fan fiction in a way, like it's written on Wattpad. So don't let like, I think it's like 700 pages. You'll get through it in a day. It reads that easily. It's insane. But because I grew up on fan fiction far too young, like the concepts in that book, I was like, I wasn't clutching my pearls or anything, which I think is why I am emotionally damaged.
The only part that made me clutch my pearls was
the baby bird part that we'll talk about later.
No, do I have to talk in metaphorical language? Do I have to avoid the hard P
within
word?
Within the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, we got to wait a little bit. Anyway, Maria, before I lay out my thesis on this book. Why don't you say what your thoughts are? Because I actually haven't talked to you about it yesterday.
Yes.
Except to say that I was considering a full castration after reading this book.
As was I.
What?
I am not the audience for this book. And I don't mean I don't like dark stuff, because I do. And I don't mean I don't like a good romantic comedy, because I do. But I am not here for smut. Like I'm so done. I'm so done with porn without, like the books that are, like, the thin-veiled porn. And so, like, I'm not the audience. This also is the kind of romance that I don't jive. Like, I would have liked this book if they hadn't been totally into each other from the beginning, which, as we know, is just a problem I have.
They had a 3-year murder game build up to them fucking though.
I don't give a shit. No,
but the problem is the novel slowly transitions into just how many different places can we have sex creatively.
Again, I don't like, I've read some smut. I like a sprinkling, a little, and some artful fade to blacks at certain points. But again, I'm going to attempt to engage with this book as what it is it wants to be, not that I am not the audience for this. And this book is a dark comedy, but specifically a dark romantic comedy. And I would argue that this book should have been more akin to some of the better romantic comedies, where they should have started out not liking each other, and that 3-year period could have been them actually falling for each other. You know, have we heard of tension at all? Any fucking tension? This book is devoid?
As much as I do like a sassy little dual POV, I do think that this book could have benefited from just being Blackbird's POV.
Yes, that was going to be my point.
I do think it could have benefited from that because obviously, I'm just going to use their nicknames because I'm going to be honest, I do not. Rowan, I'm not saying that, okay?
I did think of starting this podcast with a very bad Irish accent.
But yeah, because obviously his place starts as like a point of like almost reverence for like when he realizes who she is as the Orb Weaver. And like that's where it's like, oh my God, like another serial killer that I admire. That's awesome, you know? And because they're both in like this weird little pocket of like, oh yeah, we go after bad people and other serial killers and each other. It's like, okay, you can't both be Dexter. I need one of you to actually be a bad person. Like just a little bit.
Just a little, just to add a little tension.
Yeah. Like there's another book, I'm blanking on the title, but it's like, it's two serial killers who are like, they both know about each other, but they're not like friends or anything like that. They're basically in competition. And one of them is trying to get the other arrested. And so he basically abducts this girl, sets her up, and is like, here you go. Kill her or get caught with her, you know, as he's going to like a body dump site or something. And of course, the relationship is between the one serial killer and the girl because he doesn't kill her or whatever and just kind of leaves her out there. And then she survives. It's a whole thing. Okay. But it's like, the one guy is like, I don't kill women. I only kill other killers. I only kill bad people. The other one's like, I'm just going to kill whoever I want because that's fun for me. But it's like that, I'm like, I almost respect that more because it's like, yeah, you can't both be like heart of gold serial killers. That doesn't work with me.
Just out here vibing that happened to...
Yeah. Or even if like with Butcher, we got to see him also like forget like him like... Of course, they're just both gorgeous beyond compare because, of course, they have to be.
With tragic backstories.
Like, I would have accepted he's, like, in reverence to her because it's like, oh, my God. She, like, the Orb Weaver's a woman and then slowly becomes, like, attached to her versus, like, oh, my God, and she's gorgeous and she's not wearing a bra.
Have you seen her eat ribs? Who knew, audience, who knew rib eating was some of the most... sensual.
Okay, hold up. It is though. Okay, hold. Hard stop. Imagine. No,
I love ribs. Stop. You don't even like eating meat on bone.
Listen, imagining a really hot, beautiful chick with thick, dark hair with boobily boobs.
Katie is also bi, FYI.
Wet hair.
This makes more sense to me now, William.
And then having the ribs and being like, like, but with boobs. Like,
and then like- having, like, sauce on her fingers.
I'm dying. But with boobs.
And in this case, she knows the forbidden secret technique of tying the bottom of her shirt.
How to tie his shirt.
Yeah. Oh, so erotic. All right. It is time for me to lay out what we're talking about here. This book is three books. And none of them play nice with each other. One is nerd girl wish fulfillment of, I am gorgeous, but also extremely insecure. And also there is an incredibly hot man who is obsessed with me. That's one book. And I actually think that book is, it's not my FAP material, but I actually don't think that book is poorly written. I think as a straight, like, thing.
Not my FAP material, but it's not badly written. Are two drastically different states of being. Okay.
All right. No. So I actually don't think that part is that poorly written. I was like not super interested in it, but I was like, okay, this is reasonable to listen to. Then the author was like, basically that's the book she wrote. And then she was like, but you know what? I should have a hook for TikTok. I'll make it so that they're also serial killers at the same time, but not integrated into how they bond, how their relationship forms, or really the deeper psychology of the characters whatsoever.
That's expecting.
When he's turned on by her eating a rib, it's not a human rib. If it was a human rib, that would make more sense.
Their whole connection is that they're both serial killers and they understand each other. That is their only form of connection. They're hot and they kill people. That's it.
But I think what Will is saying is that it just is an implicit, it's an implied connection. We don't see them develop that connection over time. They walk in with that, oh, you're a serial killer who kills serial killers. I'm a serial killer.
The structure of the book does not actually have to do with them being serial killers. The moments of them bonding, like the thing that really kind of adheres them together, is him giving her cooking material. That has nothing to do with being a serial killer. That there, you can take the serial killer out of
it. I have something to say on that.
Okay, but anyway, and so like other moments, like the stuff with the dance, that actually really has nothing to do with serial killing. The fact that at the end he names the restaurant, like, this isn't Sweeney Todd. They're not eating people at this restaurant. It's just a normal restaurant. The moments of them actually bonding and the beats of the romance have nothing to do with them killing people.
That's the Hallmark movie. That's the Hallmark movie.
But I'm saying that's separate from the murder parts. What should be happening is what happens in Dexter or in... Oh, there was another example I was going to use, and now I forget it. But anyway, where the main thing this book should be is, hey, isn't it interesting how romance tropes and serial killer tropes are kind of similar, and they synergize in a way that makes you look at both of them differently in the ways that Dexter has to socialize. Dexter's an old TV show for those people who don't remember.
Please tell me your audience knows what Dexter is, because I will actually just die.
Our audience is mainly 25 to 35.
No. We have a lot of the Zoomers. It's very cool. They do we're a hip and young audience.
Uh-huh.
And so I will make more of a case as we go forward that those two things have nothing to do with each other, really. And then the last third of this book is just smut. And it's very specifically the author's smut. And the thing about it is that it's not good. This is what made me turn this book from this is fine, but not great, to I may be celibate forever. I may like cut the top of my head and just have the fringe like a monk.
You don't like them having their first time while she is a literal boot print on her face? That doesn't do it for you.
Or a broken arm. Or how she spends 2 minutes in the bathtub. Could you at least have let her soak for a little bit?
Okay, so like I've said before, if your sex stuff you find hot, but everybody else finds it silly, and that's sort of just an inherent thing with everyone. And so the problem is that this is really specific smut, and the smut is not necessarily what you would assume going in to match the characters. Like, the author clearly has a thing for piercings that, like, the characters also just have, even though it's not that normal to look at, like, genital piercings and be like, oh my god, it's so hot.
For you.
No. That's what I'm saying, though. This is a specific kink that certain people have. And so if you're not of
Is 90%, so is all smut, though. There's always someone's kink in there that may not personally apply to you.
I'm saying I don't think that the kinks spring organically from the characters or the premise of the world. I actually think, you guys said the whole thing about the bruise, I actually think that makes a lot more sense if he was super into how sensual the bruise looked on her and how damaged and the broken capillaries and that, like, to me, it's gross and it's not my kink, but that makes sense for the character.
It connects for serial killers.
Whereas, like, oh, I'm gonna baby bird in her mouth. Like, I don't understand how that's a serial killer thing. I don't understand how that's a Rowan thing. That's clearly an author thing.
Well, what you don't understand is that he is part of, like, he's got some, he's Rowan sexually is what, like, the worst
If you've ever been familiar with the BDSM community, there are men who advertise themselves as DOMs. And the thing is, in a healthy, like, well-structured, going into a scene of, like, something where you're going to be playing around with that kind of stuff, you have, like, some communication, and that's huge, good communication, all that jazz. And unfortunately, he is what people think DOMs should be, and and the like, mass-produced fantasy of it, but that's also, like, kind of, like, you have never had sex with this woman, and this is how we're gonna start? Like, at least Christian Grey had vanilla sex to start, you know? Like, they figured each other out a little bit first. Here's the thing. A lot of the stuff that happens, I wouldn't necessarily say, is stuff that grosses me out. For me, it was how it was written and the amount of dialogue during the sex scenes. Like, can y'all just shut up?
I literally three times mumbled to myself, and I don't mumble to myself on my knees. I went, shut up, you dumb bitch. And I didn't know which of the two of them I was talking to. I was just like, would you shut the fuck up? No, you're actually correct. It's a lot of it's the intensity with which it's written that doesn't actually reflect the intensity of the emotions that the author has built up. I think also this book suffers significantly from being like chick lit in that it's written in that mode. And so therefore it can't really take advantage of, oh, this is two serial killers in love, because it can't really ever dive into the prose to show you how much they like each other just through the prose versus them just saying it to each other. The dialogue constantly has to be quippy in a Joss Whedon way that's not ever actually very clever. And so I think those are, and it's not even like it uses its prose in an interesting way, like they're quipping and then in the background something horrible is happening and you can kind of feel that mounting horror without them actually saying anything of it, and it contrasts their callousness to what's going on. The book never really wants to do that, because it fundamentally literally just, it wants to do this romance thing, and then it also is like, but also they murder people.
That's one of the things, when I said earlier there's no tension, I didn't just mean romantic tension. There rarely ever feels like there are stakes to the situations they're in. Even the points where they are in danger, it never felt like they were in danger. There's just an overall lack of tension to it. The sex scenes would have worked much more, at least the first one, if the built-up tension had been more shown, not told. Amanda mentioned this, that there's a lot of info dumping and telling earlier, and I find that a lot with how they felt about each other. The character just tells you, man, he's so hot. I think, nail on head, this should have been one point of view, because all romantic tension is sapped out when you know both of them were like, oh my god, that's the hottest person I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I think they're so cute. I wonder if they like me. Like, and you're like, it should have taken one hint of a thing for the two of you to get together. The fact that it took 4 years, idiots. But so having it in one point of view, you could have kept a lot of it the same, and having it in third person so that you could have been shown her reactions, shown like the heat rushing up her neck, because they just tell you, like, it's so much telling of their feelings and why they like each other and the physical reactions.
I've said before, first person isn't a bad mode, but it tends to make authors lazy because it tends to have characters talking to themselves, which, yes, I know theoretically is all first person, but whatever. But it tends to have characters kind of ruminating, a la ACOTAR, which would be like 30% shorter if Farrah would just shut the fuck up about what she's thinking all the time. And so, well, as we go through the plot, we'll talk about these things more. But Katie and Amanda, did you want to add anything before we start?
As far as you didn't mention the backdrop of their, like, their the implied will they won't they, because let's face it, it's not really there, is a literal once a year game where they agree to not meet up outside of this, like, yearly challenge to see who's the better serial killer, really, which is kind of a little bit of, like, in its idea, I think is something. But in practice, I don't think is much of anything, especially when there are times where it's like they're clearly playing the game, but Rowan doesn't get it. Or like, she openly breaks it because she, like, just wants to see him because she doesn't have friends outside of Lark and then him. And so, again, I do think that, again, it would be more interesting if it was the one point of view from that, because then we get more understanding of, like, I don't know, especially because it looks like the sequels are going to follow his brothers and not her.
I figured the minute it was like, what's his face liked Lark, I was like, oh my god, are we gonna get a Lark what's his face
hold on
book?
A second, hold on a second,
it's called Leather and Lark.
As soon as we got three brothers, I was like, all right, so we're gonna get the three brothers trope, like from Nora Roberts-esque style of writing romance. Look, the thing is, you can't expect that much from it. It is such a trash novel.
Au contraire.
Expecting a good rom-com. That's this what I'm expecting.
Look, my gripe is that there are some funny moments in this that, like, just because they're so uncomfortable, I'm like, oh my god. There were several times I was driving my car and I actually had to be more careful driving because I cringe so hard. So I genuinely had to be more careful because it hurt me physically to listen to some of these sexual escapades they have. And you know, like, the thing is the first half is like, you can tell all she wanted to do was write a pornography. Like, that's the only reason this exists. The first half of the book is just a pretense at sexual buildup and plot development. And then the second half, it's like, oh, we had sex? Cork off the bottle. We're gonna just jizz everywhere. It's because, like, that's all that happens afterwards. It's just penis.
Can anyone tell me what her job is?
What is her job?
A data analyst. That's what she, because she's so smart with maps and shit. And she gives, like, she's like got corporate woman vibes, like hot corporate woman vibes.
It's Hallmark. It's very Hallmark of, yeah, like, oh, she's a professional woman we've picked just randomly off of a list.
And they both have time for this as restaurant owners.
Let me tell you, he takes a lot. That's why he can only do it once a year, where the game is only once a year, because he can only take off from work once a year because he's a chef.
That's a nice logic.
Sure. But it's hysterical because there is so much of this that is a Hallmark movie, but see, I wanted this to be better than just a Hallmark
romance. Oh yeah, I mean, obviously,
and by that I mean just a different, better rom-com.
I don't think you can fundamentally disassociate a Hallmark movie from the murder part. The two have to be intertwined, otherwise it's just kind of a waste and pointless, and I don't feel like the two integrate well. I think they could synergize wonderfully. You, which is a show that I don't actually think is nearly as smart as it thinks it is trying to say something about dating through also being like, well, if it's a hot stalker,
that synergizes it much better. What Will said earlier is the serial killer tropes and romance tropes, like the you need to get to know your mark, whoever you're doing, like the potential, like if you're going to do research, the like tying those different tropes together into a comedy serial killer rom-com.
Satire.
Would have been hysterical.
It would have, like, been, yes.
Like having the preparation process to go out on a date or to do something together be similar to what they do when they're going out. Like, there are so many cute moments where, and I say cute, like, in the sense that if you paired them together, it would have been funny. It could have been really funny. And because I didn't laugh once.
Oh, I laughed, but in cringe. Like, I laughed, but cringe-worthy laugh.
Were you laughing when the book wanted you to laugh, or were you laughing during sex scenes because they were written in a way that was making you cringing?
Both. I kind of liked some of the turn of phrase that she had. I liked, like I told Will, I felt like some of the narration was kind of fresh in, like not the, like, dialogue back and forth and that stuff, that's bullshit. But, like, I mean, in the, like, the descriptions of things, I just, some of it was kind of fun. It wasn't something I'd heard before.
If you
and
grew
I,
up on the internet during a specific time, you will laugh at some of the stuff. Like, if you hear, when she says, I'm boobing boobily, you're probably gonna chuckle if you know what that is referencing.
It's just, yeah. It's dumb. It's dumb humor.
And it's referential. Like, a lot of the funny stuff can be referential rather than funny in its own right. Like, it boobing boobily is only funny if you know the reference.
It hurt me so bad that he owned a restaurant. Because, just, like, I know, what, that's why I say, you're right on the mark on the Hallmark thing. He's an Irish hottie that came over and established an Irish restaurant with his two hot brothers, and he has a great accent, but he's also a serial killer, and he's also very successful. And you know what he gives her? He gives her a restaurant with both their names on it. Oh, it's the dream. It's the girl
the
dream.
The FBI is staked out outside that restaurant as we speak.
If you have one successful restaurant, open another, and still have time for this experience. I don't know.
One thing I will say is that the voice actors, I think, do this book so a good. Tremendous
They're
service.
They're so good.
There are times where, like, their dialogue, I'm not actually listening to what they're saying because I know it's going to be stupid, but the way they play back and forth is actually really nice.
Oh, they have a sexual tension between them just in the voices.
Mm-hmm. I swear, I do think that, like, casting for audiobooks has taken a crazy overhaul since the success of, I think it was, the Off Campus series from Elle Kennedy. I think because those books, those audios go crazy viral on TikTok. And so they're like, oh, if we actually cast like men and women for the different POVs,
people
really resonate with that. Yes. Versus, and then Audible also, though, they have started doing like almost like podcast style audiobooks of their own.
I've said before that I think character or actors can bring a massive amount of life to a character
and charm
that isn't necessarily there in the original book. And I think in this case, a lot of the reason this book works so well is initially I was like, this dialogue is not good, but after a while you just like hearing their voices go back and forth. And so I think that's one of the reasons. Again, I actually fully understand why this book went viral and why it's popular. Again, it has a good hook. It's Nerd Girl Wish Fulfillment, and the audio version is just fantastic, but I just don't think it really is good.
It's 50 Shades of Grey if Anastasia went ape shit.
And Christian Grey also had a restaurant.
Yeah, had a restaurant.
Well, and that's the other thing I will say is that Rowan annoyed me so much less than every other male love interest we've read in this series or this channel, because like he's just a dork, and like that actually is so refreshing after like I call them bitchy boys because I just hate like the
tortured bitchy boys.
Yeah, who are like, oh, they can say funny things, but also they also are kind of a dick all the time. And like, no, Rowan tries to banter because everyone tries to banter in this book, but he's just a dork in love. And like, there is something I think a little bit
like you said, refreshing about it.
Refreshing about that, yeah. And it's more the kind of male character I like anyway. I just wish again that it wasn't from his viewpoint and he wasn't so obsessed and there'd been build up. But anyway, the main premise of this, because we probably should start, is that there's a woman who's called Blackbird, and I don't remember her name.
Sloane. None of us are remembering.
And she is a serial killer who kills other serial killers, a la Dexter. And she starts the book stuck in a cage with a rotting body. Or the rotting body is right outside, I think, because she was killing a serial killer, but he outsmarted her at the last minute as he was dying. And who should happen upon her but another serial killer?
Who kills killers
called Rowan, who has a very hot Irish accent, and he immediately is super smitten with her.
In this moment where this scene is taking place, we get a little bit of like sensory detail that's kind of like it's not anything too new, but it's fun because the body that's next to her is ripping from rotting, and it does with the sound, and then how like the little maggots look like little orzo pieces going across the ground.
Because she's starving. She hasn't eaten in 3 days. So she's like, oh God, I'm going to get killed by orzo. I'm hungry and I'm going to get killed by orzo.
I really enjoy, I wish there was more of those kind of moments where it was like this mix of darkness. It's because the way the place is described is really depressing. It's a serial killer's den in a bayou. So, you know, it's pretty gross. Problem that happens in the novel is starting right off the bat, which is that it's trying to be ironic for being ironic's sake in some places. And some places it's like, oh, it worked out. But in a lot of places it's like, it's not that funny.
I think the thing about it is, I think conceptually this scene actually works quite well. The thing is, the prose don't quite match up well enough to their descriptive power. Like, the orzos is funny, but there's no real sensory input. We don't really get smell. We don't get, like, the atmosphere of it. Like, some horror books are so good at that, and this doesn't
this
quite.
This book should have grossed me out hard. This book,
I'm
very
weak. Going to until it didn't do anything after the
fucking,
first scene.
Fucking light. So I've mentioned this before on this podcast. I'm a chicken. I get scared real easy. There are entire episodes of Penny Dreadful that I had to watch. I had to ask Katie, could we watch it in the morning? Because it was 12 o'clock at night and I was going to not be able to sleep.
It was so low-key horror.
I was like 22. You know, I wasn't a child. And then I also can't do gore or body horror or like any of that stuff. So going in,
I thought you weren't going to be able to handle it because of that first scene. And then it never happened again.
And even the first scene, like the grossest part was the stomach. And I don't like maggots. And then the funny thing was it immediately cut the. And so I thought what we were going to get out of this was gross things that then take a comedy edge.
Yes.
And that was going to be how it was, like, you would have
that's
these
exactly
moments of
what I wanted.
Dark, like, gross shit happening, and then somebody would, like, there would be a humorous thing that would happen on top of it. And unfortunately, outside of the scene, it never happens again. I was never actually grossed out. What you get instead is there's like stuff happening in the background while the two of them have conversations that are skirting around the issue about that they like each other. But do they like you? Do you like me? And that's it. And so like the serial killer stuff really becomes window dressing in like it's a decor piece. It's like in fan fiction, where you like this one couple in this one story, and then you were like, what if I made an AU where they were serial killers?
That's literally what I told her. Yeah, it's the coffee shop AU thing. You know what I mean?
But with like serial killers and a coffee shop.
And the weird thing is, it's like when you'd watch an anime and they would have those pages that would be them at the beach. Like, it's this really serious, dark anime. But then there would be, like, them... like, with a volleyball. And it's like that.
Amanda, would you like to tell people about our Patreon and why they should join?
Sure. You should join their Patreon because it's awesome. And you get extra stuff, right? Yes?
Yeah.
Correct.
You definitely get some extra stuff.
Yeah, what kind of stuff do you think?
Could you imagine?
Obviously, it's William's foot pics. That's what you get when you sign up for the Patreon, fully. They don't like to advertise that part a lot, but I think you guys should know.
Upper tier material. Katie, could you do a better job than that, or should we just throw to Maria?
Okay, so we have a Patreon, and this Patreon is three tiers. And the first tier... it gives you good stuff. You get to go to Discord and you get to interact with our community, which is actually quite busy and very organically growing. And you can meet a lot of really cool people.
Cool and sexy people.
And then we have our second tier, level tier book. It's the book club. The book club means you get to pick a book once a month and we will read it and we will go over it together. And that's the second tier. And then the third tier is the critique level. The third one is the critique level where William and I look at something. God. Where William and I look at something and break it down on a smaller level to see how the pros and everything actually works together. Thanks.
I'm so proud of you.
Oh, that was great, guys. Between the two of you, you got most of the points.
Rowan had come to try kill this serial killer, but she got there first. And apparently they've been like almost like they've been trying to kill the same people, but the other one has been getting to this one first. He releases her from the prison and she's like hungry. She showers at the guy's house and they set it on fire and she has to put on clothing from the guy that she just killed. She's not wearing a bra. Unheard of. Even though we're in an age where, like, I feel like a lot of women don't wear bras.
Not the women that Rowan sees, apparently.
I needed to have her boobs described in detail to understand what made them so unique. I needed to understand how, like, they sat in the shirt.
They were attached to her. Okay.
Oh, that's true. And apparently, you're right.
The thing with Rowan is the thing that, like, is a common trope in romance novels because, like, it's very weird for people to have. I don't know why. It's a trope where it's like, how dare you have a sexual history outside of me? Or if it is a sexual history, it's so distant in the past, you don't even remember their names. Like, so he's a sex god. He's gorgeous. He is independently wealthy. He runs a business.
He can keep an erection while he sleeps inside her vagina for several hours.
Yeah, okay. But he also is so... and he's, like, flirty and fun. Yeah, he's, like, he's so allergic to women that aren't serial killers or something, even though this is, like, such a mind-numbing thing. So it's, like, if we got some type of, like, oh, you've never... been with other women, or like you've done, like there's one book that I read where it was like, oh no, he's just a virgin. Like, let's just have that. He's a professional hockey player who plays for full time, but he's a virgin. Okay. He's never once met a woman that made him, you know, want to break that. Okay. Whatsoever. He's not religious. He's just a virgin. And it's like, okay. And then same thing with Rowan though, where it's like, you might as well have just done that for whatever reason, because I've too been focused on killing. I need to rid the world before I'm comfortable enough to have an erection.
Serial killers have a long history of weird psychosexual things going on with them. So that's another place it could have turned
Yeah, exactly. We didn't get that. It was just like, oh no, no woman. And then for 4 years, he's just like a nun while he waits for her to get her shit together. Really. Because that's what it starts as. And until he is like, no, being around me is what makes it dangerous for her. Which, one, stupid way to go about that.
I cannot tell you how much that's when that comes up in a story, I want to literally just slip be done
this
with
it. This is YouTube,
all.
Not Twitch. You can say it.
It is the lamest, most overly used, shallowest approach to having problems like that.
Well, and especially when she's a serial killer.
Yes, I know.
And has been for years, putting herself in dangerous situations that she's been able to deal with and handle. For ages, like, I don't...
Why does she become a damsel? And again, she becomes a damsel in several situations where, meanwhile, we get a scene that we're going to get up to in a moment, hopefully, that she, like, whips out, like, her Etsy bot Damascus steel knife, and she's like, yeah, I'm like a video game character. I'm going to go kill him first.
Well, it also betrays the whole idea that he likes her for being a serial killer, because part of what you would like about a serial killer is how deadly they are.
Yes.
And so the two don't necessarily make sense with each other.
It was a rom-com trope severely clashing with the fact that she had put this in a universe where they're both serial killers, because within a rom-com, I fear for your danger in dangerous situations is a trope you like that often comes up. Now, is it one I like? No, I find it a very artificial...
Maybe it was the FBI that was onto her and she was going to get caught, and then he steps in and his brother gets him out.
Yes, there's so many other ways they could have brought some external tension to this relationship. Anyway, continuing on with the fucking plot, because we're still at the rib-eating scene. She eats ribs so sexily, he gets hard. It was terrible.
God, yeah,
I wasn't expecting. I wasn't expecting within the first 10 pages of this book to get that. Like, it just, especially given that she was just in a cage with the dead body for 3 days.
Yeah, she's literally starving. She is not doing it sexually. She is literally on the verge of death. Okay, and she's eating, and he can't help turn his cock off for 2 minutes.
I know.
I'm putting a moratorium on female writers writing about erections, because I don't think they fundamentally understand the physics involved. Like, they have a middle school boy understanding of how erections work.
William, can you tell us how erections work?
Can you make a PowerPoint presentation, please?
No. My mother watches these. This is a Christian podcast. Thank you very much.
Would you like a private live stream for Patreons, where
you just go through like different erection moments in romance novels and how William was personally offended by that as a person with a penis.
Yes, thank you.
Why does nobody talk about that for a lot of guys, especially like after the age of like 27? Like, sometimes the first time you don't get fully hard.
Representation. Again, the way they write about it is just incredibly juvenile. And I think it's one of these things where like
his rock hard cock.
I think it's a thing where maybe women who are reading this don't understand how it doesn't work like that. So for them, it's like, they don't, there's not a disconnect where they go, oh, that's not a real thing that happens. Or I don't know if they care. I'm not sure which it is.
It's the inverse of what happens with a lot of times when we've read things written by men and we're like, that's not how our body works.
Boobs don't do that.
Yeah, boobs don't do that. This is the moment where the man is looking at it and going, that's not how the body works. Mm. That's not how it is the inverse of that. And in both situations, now while the men looking at the female written things, and this is a little bit newer, it neither should be happening. Can we please be educated about the things we write?
That's a good point. I think you're correct. I think we should only read more male books on this channel from now on.
That's not what I said.
The takeaway is that you should not have a more in-depth understanding of the veins of an eye when you're carving it out than a penis when you're basically writing smut.
And also, there was no penis carving in this book, which I was a little disappointed by.
I fully thought there'd be something.
Oh, but it didn't warn you at the beginning.
No, but it could have. But it could have been a nice surprise. Anyway, and he's like, he likes her immediately, and she's like, he's like, oh, but she's flighty. So I'm gonna come up with this idea that we're going to do a contest every year where we try to kill someone, and she's like, okay, I'm in.
Because she also's like, goddamn, the accent, the look. He has a scar running through his lip.
She doesn't. Even know he's a cook yet.
Yeah, she doesn't even know he's a chef yet.
That would have sold it for me. The serial killer stuff, eh. But a chef, mwah, fantastic.
And a, like, head of your own restaurant? That's no line cook, ladies and gents. Anyway, so a year goes by. She hasn't heard from him, but she's like obsessed with the idea. And she's waiting for the contest to happen. Like, and you catch her in the middle of her like about to kill this guy that she has strapped to a table. And like again, it would have been so interesting if it would have gotten like really detailed into like the gore of what's happening.
I was unhappy that. She had a suction cup for the blood to be super clean and everything. And then she gets the call and she's just like, and it's like very movie-esque almost. And it's just like, oh, it's time to go. We'll make this quick. And then she just horribly bloodily just like kills the dude on her rack. And it's like, what was the point of the clean approach before then?
It's because this book is not great at characterization when it comes, because again, the serial killer stuff is window dressing, because she should be methodical and planned in everything she does. The fact that she doesn't get to know the destination or where they're going until the day of should drive her up a wall. This is a girl who plans.
Oh yeah, she should be having like anxiety attacks.
She should be having like less so I want to see this guy than just anxiety of I don't know what I'm doing. Tell me when. You're like, I can't just be like, next year you have to at least tell me the day it's happening so I can plan to like pack a bag.
She's a data analyst.
Yes.
No, but also like the methodology for them, because like I'm a true crime girly. I like a lot of crime shows. Okay. Her methodology does not make sense, really, because they also routinely characterize her as she is essentially unhinged. She's very controlled, but she is unhinged. And that's what breaks her when they do have the climactic moment at the end. That's what breaks her and makes her realize, oh, he didn't actually care about me because of what he tells her. She believes him because she knows that that's true to some degree. And that's why it hurts from him. And so to be partially, oh, I'm the orb weaver, I leave these maps, I do this very detailed thing, which to her makes sense, but is essentially unhinged. They're never going to figure it out because it is unhinged. But then to go through like, oh no, I have a full killing room that has a suction cup is a level of methodology that just does not fit with the orb weaver mentality. Because the whole point is that they stumble upon the bodies. Why would she have this setup? It doesn't make sense.
That was a completely different kind of kill. And I didn't, it made it almost seem, which I thought that's where it was going to go with it. It made it seem like it was an addiction and like she couldn't have the time to go hunt another serial killer or something. So she just nabbed like some cheap, like, other bad person off the street and is gonna kill him. But then that never comes up again as well. It's because the whole she has this whole moment where she's like, am I de-evolving as a serial killer and getting more sloppy and everything? It's because she needs to kill and that she's so desperate she's willing to do this instead of her usual artwork. And I thought that's was gonna be developed, but if it isn't, then it's just so out of the blue that she's just killing some dude on a gurney in a box.
And again, why do you have a box if your entire shtick as the Orb Weaver is going to these locations and setting it up there? Anyway, she talks to her friend Lark, who we discover is her only bestest friend in the whole world. Lark is very much Manic Pixie Dream Girl, but like for Sloan.
And also accepting of her murder sprees. Like, what? Hey, that's the other thing, is this almost is like an alternate reality where people are like much chiller about murdering other people or something.
All of Rowan's brothers, too,
are also just okay with it. Like, the fact that it's not secret from any of the people that they... Because like, I think it's because that would have added, God forbid, tension between our main characters and the people they love. And this woman apparently wanted zero tension everywhere. It's like Legends and Lattes is coming back to haunt me. This is like the easiest version of this plot.
Here's the other thing, is that it actually detracts from their romance. Because if she does have Lark as a very close friend, this is an element of her life she cannot share with her, you as the reader would feel that kind of like tension and that kind of like claustrophobia a little bit. And then all of a sudden when she can let someone into this life, you'd be like, oh, okay, there is kind of a letting out of energy that you as the reader would mirror with the character and that would bond the two of you. And you would even necessarily have to say it, though this book obviously would say it through like 9,000 words. But like, and so like her wanting to have a gal pal who's also cool with murder actually just hurts the book as a whole.
Also think about the comedic value it would have been if she referred to her hobby of killing as a different hobby to her friend Lark.
She's really into pickleball.
Yeah,
she's
or something really into pickleball.
Like, did I hear someone groaning? I'm just doing, there's a game of pickleball happening in the background. Don't worry about it.
That could have been a constant meme within the novel as things progressed with Rowan. And it would have been really funny. Yeah, no, it didn't make, it took all the tension away that everybody knew everything was okay with everything.
So yeah, she talks to Lark and Lark's like, listen, you're really into this guy, you should, because she's like, am I crazy if we're gonna, like, he's just gonna send me a location and I'm gonna go, and Lark's like, listen, you need some fun, like, go girl, do you, a guy who also gets your weird hobby, like, I believe in you, like, you go. And so then Rowan's brother is the one that is finding serial killers and giving, he just text both of them a location, and then they have to go to that location, figure out who the serial killer is, and then one whoever kills them first does the winning. And so she gets the location, she's immediately business class on at 23. The girl's 23. She has just graduated college. Like, how the fuck is she affording business class tickets?
In my little headcanon, it's the Montagues. It's because, like, they're referenced as being, like, basically, like, mobsters. And they're the ones that got her out of trouble when she murdered her.
No, the Montagues were the, that's not Lark's family. Basically, the idea is, the first kill Sloane ever makes, just to give the audience some background, is this, the head of an art program that her and Lark were at, that they both met at, but the guy who was the head of the program abused the girls there, and especially Lark, to the point where, of like, some rough stuff that is not actually stated nor gone into, and Sloane snaps and kills him, and Lark's like, you did it for me, and don't worry, my family will take care of this, and then, like, that's it. That's as much stuff as you get.
Side note, she expo dumps this while carving out a dude's eye. She's like in his lap straddling him, carving out his eye, and then being like, I'm killing men like you because of what happened. And that's how Rowan finds out. So we don't even get this from you know, Sloane's point of view. It's all Rowan's point of view as he's coming out of a drug stupor of eating human flesh. It's a whole thing. it's an ongoing thing. It's insane. But yeah, that's Sloane's whole background, is that she's an artist, and that's why she's the orb weaver and makes these, like, crazy detailed maps. So, like, again, there's, like, this whimsical calculated thing in there that I just, they're the characterization's all over the place with her as far as, like, her methodology.
So the thing is, I don't understand why Sloane is a serial killer. Like, there's an interesting idea here, both with her and with Rowan, where Rowan, like, his first kill was his father because his father was abusive. There's kind of an interesting idea of, once you pass a certain taboo, that taboo is no longer, like, a rigid thing. You can just, you know, all of us, once you take that plunge, like, okay, maybe you do find killing easier now. But I don't really feel that Sloane needs to kill. Like, in Dexter had this kind of, like, bubbling need to kill people, and then once he did, it was like a release valve, and you could see it in his character, he would become better. And so, like, I don't understand why she continued to kill people. Every once in a while she'll say that, like, she feels a little bit of pressure building up, but the thing is, it's not really explained the psychology of why she needs to do this or feels,
well,
the need.
I think with the first kill it makes sense, because there are people like Sloane, who she has no family. The only person she cared about was Lark, essentially a sister to her.
Yeah.
She was fine with herself being abused. She was going to suffer through it, because who was going to look at her? She doesn't have family to look and catch all the signs. When she found out Lark was also being abused, that's when she snapped. And so there are plenty of people like that that would then take that step.
That part I'm fine with. It's the what keeps her killing the after that, though. Like, because again, in Dexter, he has that, like, need, that urge, that, like, itch in his brain.
I think in the book, though I haven't read the book, he talks a lot about it as his dark passenger. But it's understood that this is just an urge he has for this kind of violence and almost control, because for Dexter, it's a lot about control. You know, he builds the scene, he takes his trophy. His trophy is not even, like, a shiny thing, it's just some blood. And then he, like, goes through the routine of it. And, like, you kind of feel through... The thing about it is that Dexter gets a lot away with showing a lot of this just through, like, visual cues or music or atmosphere in a way that this book doesn't. We don't feel her release upon killing something. We don't. And the thing that you were saying about the first reason she killed, I actually didn't super pick up on that. And I think it would have been more interesting if that had been, or I think it would have been interesting if that had been explained more about like how she had latched on so much to Lark that that was the thing
well,
that
it's
broke
told,
her to
not
do
shown.
It.
That's why she actively says it, but it's just like, it's not believable if you just say it. I need to see it.
They go to their first thing and they're at a like, cheap shitty motel in like hiking country somewhere and the guy who runs the motel like watches Sloane masturbate through paintings
while Rowan's listening to her masturbate through the wall.
Rowan was listening and then heard somebody else
in the painting
and then like busts in on that guy runs.
That was really funny, like, actually. I liked that scene.
And Sloane thinks it was him in the wall, and so there's like hilarity ensues, and then she's like, I'm gonna go kill him, and like she like literally video games with her knife.
Yeah, I loved that part.
Rowan's like, no, he's not.
After snapping with her, like he like shoves her up against a tree and is like, he's mine.
He doesn't even say it. He goes, mine. And what he means is, you're mine, because I don't want you running into danger against this man. And you went on a date with him earlier to get him because that you suspected him. And so like, da, da, da. And he's like, mine. And she thinks he's saying, that kill is mine. And she's like, fine, go ahead. You take it. Which is this is a competition. What are you doing? Like,
yeah. Anyway, why don't she fight him?
I think she's genuinely freaked out in that moment because she hasn't seen Rowan kill at all at this point. Like, she just knows
that
he's a killer. So this is her first time, which again, she even says, I was gonna run. Like, when he's brutally beating the shit out of her, the guy. Also, side note, the reason they're going there is like couples or someone are going missing, and she believes it's him. And if she's right, it's him. He's just like, he watches them through the walls and then kills them, like when they're sleeping or something weird, and then hides their bodies. It's a whole thing. But she is genuinely freaked out seeing him lose control because they're mixing methodologies here, because he, very goofy fun, but then he has the dark passenger that when he is experiencing violence, he loses control fully and is just like, the guy is dead and he is still beating the shit out of him.
She describes it as a Picasso afterwards. His eyes are there, his nose are there.
That was a fun description.
Yeah, but it could have been better. Like, the thing is, to make it really feel it, so me and Katie did a close look at one of the scenes from the Scorpio races that was a horror scene. And the fascinating thing about that scene is it's so creepy and scary, and at no point are you told how the characters are feeling about things, and at no point do they have an internal monologue. It's just through the sensory
in the moment
of what's
it's
happening.
In the moment.
Yeah, and what the character and what the book has built up to that point. So if it's a Picasso, it should be described in lurid details and prose, and you should be able to feel it, and so that you as the reader are like, oh man, there is a beauty here that she sees. Kind of like in Hannibal, the TV show, where the murder like scenes are like operatically beautiful. It's supposed to be like an exaggerated.
That show
form.
Was on prime time. That show was just on regular viewing hours.
I always thought that was strange, but no. Well, there is a certain allure that I have to the vagueness of just saying it's a Picasso, because that leaves a lot to the imagination, and I kind of like that. So I do like that in and of itself. But no, you're not wrong. The problem is, again, window dressing, like Maria stated.
Also, how cool would it have been for there actually be some mystery about who they were trying to get, and then building a profile of the serial killer they're hunting? Like, true crime is such a thing. How awesome would it have been to follow them as they detect their way through figuring out who the serial killer is, his version, finding like their different methodologies for this discovery, and then because like we love some true crime stories, and then like learning about like how many people have they killed, what's their style, what are their
that
markers?
Would make sense why it would take a year between kills. It's because they're doing the research for a
that's
year
a good point,
and
actually.
Go and kill.
They can't both be Spencer Reed. They just can't.
I think the thing is, she's not a true crime fan, I think, the author, because there again isn't that like level and attention to detail and interest.
Like you're saying, like it's window dressing, but there's a weird element here where it's like, okay, you may be familiar with it in some elements. Like, if you've watched Criminal Minds, you're not making this book. You just haven't. That's just not how this works. Maybe Law & Order SVU, maybe. Like, there's a couple of crime shows where I'm like, okay, I can see where you got here from this. But then there's also, like, key elements of, like, the insanity of it, where I'm like, did you go so crazy so that you wouldn't have to go realistic with it? Because you don't want, like, it makes you uncomfortable. It's weird. Like, I do wonder you know, what her actual overall comfort level is as an author with the subject matter, because clearly she just wanted to get to the sex, but wanted the build up. And it's like, oh yeah, here's all of this in between, because that's the point of this book, sort of. That's what I'm telling you. It's the whole premise. But like, the details are a little all over the place that are just really inconsistent. And I'm not expecting, like, you know, doctorate level dissertation of like killing methodology, but some character consistency would be lovely.
Or like, if you're going to write a book about serial killers, unfortunately, that is the like it's like if you were going to write a book about sentient plants and you didn't talk at all, like there was no like at no science at all.
Wild turn. So is that a book?
I don't know. I was trying to find something where it would be weird not go into the detail.
True. Yeah. Like if all you knew about plants was like that they're green. Whereas, okay, so like my mother loves gardening way too much. It's one of the banes of my existence. But like she would be able to add so many small details about plants and like in jokes about stuff that like I couldn't if I was just like, and then they were evil. And the thing is, serial killers have such a fascinating and twisted psychology that's in so many ways also very pathetic. And so actually mixing that with like a romance is actually just, I find that really interesting. I think part of the problem is that she really wants these characters to be a healthy romance. And yeah, like, this is just the wrong problem. He uses a safe word. Later on, he's like, pick a safe word, bitch, or whatever. And it's like, no, you're a serial killer who delights in taking power, the ultimate power over other people and imposing your will on them. You're not picking a safe word when it comes to sex.
I've read quite a few fan fictions, not to bring fan fictions back in, but that's where you see this kind of stuff. I've read a couple pretty dark things where there are legitimately two characters doing abhorrent things to each other, and it is a romance somehow. And so that writing always throws me, because I'm like, how did you accomplish this grotesque tone?
14-year-olds are incredible, okay?
God, I know, dude. Like, such dark places. But anyway, like, I've read some pretty grotesque relationship stuff that, like, would suit something like this. And that's actually how I thought it was going to go at the beginning, where he was, you know, like, at the very beginning, he teases leaving her in the prison where he first meets her. And I thought there, and with the way he's, like, his aggression was, and he was kind of, like, stalkerish with her, I thought it was going to take a really dark turn where he became, like, controlling, or there was something like that. But I'm like, but there's too much humor here. And then as it progressed, I was like, it's a pornography. Purely.
But yeah, I just don't think they quite match up.
After they do this kill, she goes to his restaurant
because she wants to see him again, like a couple of months later, and she was disturbed by seeing him. Oh, well, afterwards she like stays, she fixes him up,
there's some hurt comfort. Yes,
he won the end. They separate a couple months later. Lark basically encourages her to some degree, or like not even that, like she just kind of is like, I just want to see him. So she just books a plane, shows up at his restaurant. Even though they've never even really like had this discussion about whether or not that's okay. Their whole thing is that it's a game of them meeting once a year. And she goes, is scared, goes, sits in a corner, and they put her in a very specific booth. And she orders, but she's like, oh my God, the waitresses are gorgeous. Like, I don't know. This is who the women that he sees. Like, I'm nobody compared to them. In theory, it makes sense for her if we got a more consistent thread of her timidness with him. But like where she's not timid is the killing.
She's bipolar,
which is why,
with him, which doesn't. Yeah. Despite it being serial killers and there being like maybe other multiple layers of like mental illness. That being said, no, it's bipolar. And the writing is bipolar.
So the thing is that there actually could be a very interesting idea that she is. One of the things she likes about killing is the control involved in it, because the rest of her life is awash in non-control. Maybe she has difficulty socializing with people. She doesn't understand social situation. Not that she's autistic, because we don't want to go that far in terms of stigmatizing mental illness or whatever. But like, she doesn't really understand social things. Her life is very, she's not a data analyst, you know, she's like a fry cook or something where her shifts are on.
Her being like a city planner or something would make way more sense to me, because it's like, oh yeah, the map system, the art, like something with architecture, or like the layout, I think would have made way more sense.
She didn't think that far into it. She just has to be a hot corporate girl on her real life area.
Pretty much. And so like, I think that could have been an interesting idea. The insecurity won me over a little bit, because I actually think it's quite well written here, but I still don't really understand where it springs from in her character, because we don't really get enough. This book needs to be a little bit more of a character study than it is if you're going to go to the extreme of killing someone.
It's not like she was awkward growing up, and even though she has like glowed up, she doesn't feel it yet because she is still so young. She's still got some body dysmorphia issue. Like, no, there is none of that. And she's often like, when they banter, very confident in her bantering.
She's deciding that, like, eventually she knows, is Rowan here? Is Rowan going to come out? And she decides she's not ready to face him. She went all this way. She's in his restaurant. She ordered food. Doesn't matter. So she draws a blackbird, basically, in her sketchbook and decides she wants to leave it there so that there's proof that she was there. She wants to leave her mark in some way, which is a very interesting choice for her. Again, with everything in combined, it just feels out of character. Like, I liked it as an element. I don't think it fits with what we get from the rest of her. Aside from the fact that her Orb Weaver situation, the strings and all of that, is a very clear, I'm leaving my mark, but there's a story here. There's a reason this is here. It's a calculated move. It's not just surprise. It's the Orb Weaver. It's there is a map here to find the bodies or to find the next person or to do X, Y, and Z. There's something here that the police need to get it and they're too stupid to figure it out. She's not leaving it because he's too stupid to realize she's there. She's leaving it because she's desperate to leave some mark on this place that she matters in Rowan's life outside of the killing, which just I don't think works here.
So you know how I mentioned earlier Rowan's also a chef, you know, serial killer, chef that owns his own restaurant, Irish hottie. The same problem when you mentioned the drawing, I was like, oh my God, that's right. I forgot. That's her too. She's an artist. She's a very good artist that comes from an artist background, from a private art place, but she's a data analyst and a serial killer.
With great tits. Don't forget the book mentions that like nine times.
Rested boobily. So they have this like, again, it's a very clear, oh God, she thinks she messed up because she broke the rules, really. And so what she thought was originally like this, like, outgoing moment of, I'm going to go see my friend, because we're obviously friends because we kill people. We're friends. And then she is overwhelmed by her own anxiety and all this stuff. And so seeing him, she thinks he's mad that she's there. And we hear one of the waitresses says, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to come and get you or whatever, which we don't know what that is yet, but I assumed what it was as it came out. She flees, and then again, they don't really seem to... Is this the dinner thing, or is that later?
She stops talking to him. Like, she kind of pulls back. He's like, I wish you would have stayed. And she's like, ha! Yeah! And it's super awkward for about 10 days. And Rowan's like, man, I was so happy to see her. Then she fucked off. So then he goes to where she lives. She lives in Raleigh, North Carolina. He's in Boston, okay?
Of course she lives in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Carolina.
And of course he lives in Boston as an Irish man.
He flies to Raleigh. He hires a kid he goes grocery shopping. He gives the groceries to a kid. The kid delivers it to her. The thing is, it would have been great if she would have figured it out and that he'd been there. Like, again, cute serial killer romance.
There's no reason for her to not figure it out. It would have been really funny if he just did Instacart, but then if he was thinking about just doing Instacart or something and still watching, but then he decides instead, wait, what if she kills the guy? Like, she thinks I'm giving him, so he used a kid intentionally. I was like, that there's something there with using a kid, like, because he knows she won't kill a kid. I think there's something there that they could have played on, but I don't think they wanted to go there.
But also, I don't think it was intentional. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great aspect, but I don't think the author did that on purpose.
Yeah.
This would be the thing. In all of their killing moment interactions, there should be, well, let me think about her mindset, who she is, the kinds of things she'd respond to. That absolute, but like Will said in the beginning, you have the romance and then you have the serial killer part and they don't cross over. So he sends her Orzo, again, calling back to the little maggots in the beginning, and he's like, she calls him and she's like, did you fucking send me Orzo? And he's like, and maybe some asparagus. And basically they cook together because he was like,
doesn't he get a hard on while this happens too?
Yes.
If you hadn't left, I would have taken you into the kitchen. We could have cooked something together. It would have been nice. So we're going to do it now. And basically this is his way of kind of trying to repair her pulling back at the, because there was also this thing where one of, his really pretty friends comes over and like puts an arm around him. Her name's Anna. And she's like, oh no,
I'm not pretty. I'm a freak.
Does he like her?
I think this actually is where the writer's writing actually like shined pretty well. Again, is in the, like, it even is. This whole restaurant or this whole making food portion of the book. Like, I was like, oh, this is cute. And again, with the voice actors, it is actually really very
cute.
This
is an intimacy that fits with what's going on with the murder plot. Like, yeah, we're not together, but we are working together on something that is not killing. This makes sense as like a first step for them in a relationship outside of the killing.
Yes, but also this should have been like he's giving her human food to cook, or he's giving her like little tasks in terms of finding a serial killer that he knows is around her or something. Like, the food doesn't...
He's a chef, William.
Yeah, but
it's
he
Hallmark.
Should be Sweeney Todd.
I don't know why you want cannibalism so badly, William. We need to discuss this.
That actually is a recurring thing on this channel, is that we are always rewriting things to have cannibalism.
I don't think you can have that with what we end up getting in the next... No. Is it no, the next no. one? I don't think you can have
That's
that.
A darker turn for this novel, and it's not, again, slowly but surely, this becomes how many places can we have sex very lovingly, very so, trustingly, yes. very comfortingly.
This either needed to be just the rom-com portion, or it needed to be an actual, like,
dark humor
melding of the serial killer and the romance tropes. I think you could have, it needed to do, and this does neither. They cook together, they do it 3 times, and then he doesn't do it anymore, and he watches her come out at around the time the deliveries happen, and she's like, no delivery today. Also, this guy is sending her A5 Wagyu. Like, the girl is eating well.
Shmoney,
honey. Anyway, and so, but it's repaired their relationship enough.
Oh, yeah, money's not an issue for either one of them either.
Again, she's 23. With no family.
Wait, I didn't even... You know what's funny is it never occurred to me. I forgot she was 23. I kept seeing them both as 35.
Yeah, me too. For some reason, I
That's
thought they were
the
like
age.
30s.
She should have been. She has, how long has she been serial killing? Like, since she was 18, to have enough of a profile? It takes a few years for the FBI to be like, oh, you exist. Unless you're doing it enough that you're going to get caught. The next time they do a competition, it's this guy named Thurston, and he's like, he abducts people for dinner parties.
He's Hannibal Lecter.
Lannibal Hector. I've been practicing that joke for a while.
She has figured out, and she knows, like, she figured it out, but somehow Rowan just knew nothing. He's like, oh, we're going to a dinner party. This is great. He drinks the drugged wine. He eats the people because it's a rump roast of a human. And she's like, oh, no.
And she's trying to tell him in the worst way possible.
Yeah, she doesn't actually try. Also, she shouldn't be trying, technically.
Also, why didn't she? Because, like, if you're worried about this happening, the guy Thurston invited them for dinner the day before. Like, they...
Yeah, she had time.
Just tell him.
She had time to be like, yo, this is the guy we're here to get. He's a serial killer cannibal. Beware at his fucking house. Eat the vegetables, you know? No, she doesn't. He eats people. Also, Thurston has a servant who...
Daniel?
Like...
David.
Who doesn't respond but does things, and she's like, oh, wow.
He's like a zombie. He's been lobotomized.
The fact that Rowan doesn't realize that David is, like, messed up, he doesn't even seem to clock. He's just like, huh, that's weird. Like, that, I need you to, I know you're in love with her, but still, like, come on.
Can we just, yeah, pause and comment on how is Rowan a serial killer?
A successful serial killer?
How is he smart enough to be a serial killer? There is not 1 ounce of his ability to track brought up in this, ever. At least she
he just kind of
like,
stumbles
oh,
on
data
people.
Or something, you know, and her mats and stuff.
He didn't even,
it.
Like, even the first kill that he ends up winning is not because he figured it out. No, he was so jealous with her that he just was like, oh, there's a guy in the wall. But she knew, that's why she went to dinner with him. She was like, I had a theory. I knew it was him.
Is his brother just always like, I found this guy, go kill him? Like, is that it? Is is he like zero brain?
Is his brother just using him as cleanup material for the FBI? Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's the thing. Because I'm really confused. So I looked at, you know, Leather and Lark because it got recommended to me on Kindle Unlimited or whatever. And so I started looking at it and I was like, it doesn't come out till June. But basically it's saying that the brother is a contract killer. And then Lark, they have to get fake married. It's a whole thing. Because, of course.
Oh, my God. The fake marriage trope?
But then the other brother, he only has 2 brothers, right? The other brother
Bjorn.
Is a doctor. The one. that's a doctor. So then he's not with the FBI. He's just a contract killer and then has like a leather working shop or something. That's why it's called Leather and Lark.
He has a connection with the FBI. He is contracted through the FBI to kill people. He's an assassin.
That makes more sense. That makes more sense. You know, like, he's with like BlackRock or whatever the fuck and he's a mercenary or something. That makes more sense.
But then why wouldn't he just do, like, again, so.
Yeah. It's like, listen, we're tracking him, but we don't want to. Well, because it's also, isn't the whole point, like, we don't actually know who it is. We just know that there's something happening in this area. Isn't that the whole point of the contest? And they have to figure out who it is. So yeah. It's like, listen, there's a bunch of killing happening. The FBI is stumped. Can you, my little sicko dog, serial killer brother and his little girlfriend that's not his girlfriend, like, can you guys can just go handle him? That for me? Yeah, can you guys just go do that? That'd be great. Like,
that'd be fantastic.
Don't tell anyone.
Just have
you got
a Rolodex of serial killer locations.
Yeah,
all the cool detail about tracking any of it, or like the like what their actual crimes are. Like,
Well, and also there could have been fun things about. He's like, oh god, it's so nice that you can take over this part, and she's like, okay, but you can take over that part. And it could even have initially have been like, oh, you know, they're snitty to each other, but then they figure out how to work together and they're matching.
Like they're both
or
bad at something, but then when they come together, they make the perfect serial killer. There was something there.
And again, what a nice metaphor for the romantic side of it as well. Like, you, the serial killer and romance stuff can
synergize.
He passes out in his food, the rump roast. She gets Thurston. And this is the part where she expo dumps her, I kill bad men because a bad man like you assaulted my friend and I wasn't going to let anyone assault her. So I killed him. And now I kill bad men. And like, he's literally just sitting on his lap, as Amanda said, just gouging some eyes out. Rowan comes to, the guy is killed and they've got David there, you know? And he's like, we're gonna leave David here and fuck off. And she's like, no, you know, just because he's lobotomized doesn't mean he can't do stuff. I guarantee you, like, you should give him a
as he is eating sperm ice cream, because again, Thurston is a cannibal,
freshly milked,
there's a date and everything.
Yeah, and this guy's just going to town at it. And she was like, give him a job, and he was like, I don't know what job to give him. And she was like, he can wash dishes.
Doesn't make any sense.
So
whatever,
they fly David out. There's no missing persons about David,
which should have been a red flag. There should have been, especially because,
oh my god,
okay, so basically, not, I won't go into what it is, but basically the thing with David is that he is someone else, okay, Sloane was apparently tracking. And so there's red flags there that we just don't get until the end. And I'm like, there was something else here that you should have been doing, because now I'm annoyed at you.
I knew instantly what David was going to be used for when he disappeared from all of the scenes, because I was like, wait, if you're going to bring him back, you're going to incorporate him for comedy, but he's never there for a comedic scene. So I'm like, he must be the secret bad guy.
Yes, or, and also, I wish they would have verified, because the other thing that teed me off was all the stuff going bad in 3 and Coach, like the explosion of the wires being cut and disconnected.
How would they not put they're two crazy intelligent serial killers.
The book doesn't even go, and it was David. It's like she forgot to be like, it's very odd. Anyway, so they get David a job at his restaurants, washing dishes. Things go well. They do another kill. So this is like year 4, and it's this guy who, like, if you've seen
Texas Chainsaw Massacre,
it's Bubba.
His mother's mummified skeleton sits on a chair in the living room. Obviously, some mommy issues.
A la Psycho.
I needed her to be more freaked out when she found that. She was just like, I bet you were a real bitch, weren't you? Because it's always the mom. which I'm not disagreeing, because it typically is. look at me. But then you have... She was not, like, disturbed the fact that he just had her corpse around. She knew she was missing. Like, they never found the mom. They just assumed she was alive or, like, just a bitch somewhere, like, died and, like, was buried somewhere else. But she should be more disturbed by seeing him. With what we've been given of her, elements of this should freak her out. And it doesn't. Instead, she's like, I have an idea, and just takes the head.
She is so fucking weirdly manic pixie dream girl psycho in this moment.
She also finds the guy's room where he watches stuff, and she sees the evil guy going to get Rowan, so she jumps out, and then the guy, like, hits her over the head, throws her in his, like...
That scene was really weirdly... This is, again, where I think there's something that is missing here as far as, like, the author's background. I don't know if it's horror movies. I don't know if it's true crime. I don't know what. But this is a horror movie scene. That's what this is. This is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This is House of Wax. This is a horror movie scene. But the layout of... There's too much sophistication from him, but there's also... like just a really weird breakdown, like, because how does she see Rowan, you know, view? I thought it was through a window at first, but then if it's a screen, that's worse. I thought there was another person, and that's why she gets whacked.
You just reminded me, it never explained this.
Nope.
Remember, she goes into a room, she's like, and she saw something she didn't expect. It was a whole bunch of really nice computer monitors, and it was security cameras all throughout the house, and I was like, so he knows how to use, like, wait, what? Like, I was like, what? Is he?
It doesn't match.
That's an episode of, like, Criminal Minds where, like, but it's also, like, he's, like, a split personality, but then he watches all the people he's going to kill for them to sin and then goes after them once they've sinned. But it's that whole setup is, like, it's, like, a very decrepit old house in the country, and then all these computer monitors, it's that same exact scene.
Except this time, it's just his house.
That never comes up again.
And also, how does she see him going toward Rowan, and then immediately, she gets hit over the head the minute she
exits. I know, it doesn't make sense.
That's not how space works. She gets hit over the head, thrown into a basement, and there's a naked woman there like, he killed Max. Max is dead. And she's like, okay, I'm gonna get us out of here.
Yeah, like, please be calm. Please chill.
Her and Rowan have cell phones. This isn't an actual problem. She texts Rowan. Rowan comes and releases them.
If What's-Her-Face is naked down there, why didn't he make her get naked too?
I think, no, he if he knows Rowan is there, he's like, oh, I don't have time for you to get, I don't have time to strip her down.
Bigger,
like,
bigger down. Threat.
Yeah, there's no methodology. There's no clinic. There's no clinical, like, I'm going to do this because I want this from her. He's trying to get the man out of the way, which I would assume he did with the other girl too. Like, oh, he killed Max. And then maybe he came after her type of thing.
So they get this guy and he's like, she's injured. And she also has a boot mark because the guy stepped on her face. Her nose, not broken. Her cheekbone, not broken. How do you have how is it hard enough for you to have a bruise that literally shows the Carhartt logo, but your face isn't broken?
Her eyes don't even get swollen shut.
Mm-mm. Anyway, this, again, window dressing, aesthetics. That's what this is. It's an aesthetic.
Look, you know, like, on America's Next Top Model, when they dress up in, like, the fancy, posh version of, like, you know, slum, or not slum, but, like streetwear, or, you know, it's that. She just looks kind of a little bloody hot, so it fits the serial killer vibe, and that's why they're about to not fuck, actually.
Once they finally deal with this guy and they light the house on fire and they release the girl, they have to go. Yeah, they have to go to his brother's house to deal with her arm.
They had their first kiss. You jumped over. They had their first kiss.
Yes, it was, like, hot and passionate.
Oh, we forgot
blah,
the
blah,
dance.
Blah.
There's a dance, like an event he invites her to.
Yeah.
And she thinks things are going to happen. And he's like, let's have fun. We'll go murder that person. And she's like, that's what you meant? And she's like, I'm in this hot booby dress.
Again, William, I think this is the whole point, like, what you had talked about with, like, the two things being separated. They want it separated, you know? And so, like, when it is blurred like this, because this, it makes, it is blurring the line with him, but he doesn't realize what that could mean for her.
No, you're correct. And like, that is one way to characterize it, is that, like, she murders people because she wants attention, or she murders people, but she wants a connection that's not murdering people. But then they do bond when they murder people. And so, like, I don't think there's a clear message there about what is the theme here. Is she trying to get out?
There needed to be an ex from her that was also a killer, that things were just, like, everything was killing. Like, there needed to be something where that makes more sense here.
Yes,
for
that's
her
so
to be
true.
Like, I need actual connection that's not just murdering. Yes, that's where we bond. But, like, I need to know there's something more than that, because my ex.
And then Rowan gets very insecure, like, oh, did he have a bigger knife when he killed people? She's like, it's not about that.
It's not about the size of his
knife. How long could he sustain his rageful violence? How long could he keep going? My stamina's better.
She's like, oh, you know, it was just raw animal. And he's like, oh.
There's that whole scene, and she gets, and but this is the moment where he realizes, oh my god, maybe she wanted a little something more. But then, as he's about to kiss her at this dance thingy, his phone rings, and the oven
How
at his
lame.
Restaurant blew up, and she has to go home. And then jump to this during the killing thing, they kiss, And then they go to his brother's house. She's in Ben.
There's another girl there because, of course.
Yeah, no, she's going to be the third love interest.
Her name's Rose. She was in the circus.
I'm sure her circus name is a bird name, as is Lark and Blackbird.
She thinks that they're, like, she doesn't realize that that's the person that she lives with's brother. Rose doesn't realize it. So there's a scene, you find out Rowan's dumb childhood name. And then, like, he, like, helps her. She's like, I'm going to take a bath. And he was like, do you want help? Do you want Rose to help you? And she's like, no, you.
She realizes that he is pulling back because he is genuinely disturbed that she could have been killed via their game. And he blames himself, which is incredibly fucking stupid. But that is what's actually happening.
And she's injured and he doesn't want to, he doesn't want that to be the thing. And then, like, she's like, no. And then, like, she gets naked and he's like, oh, my God, the piercings, the piercings. I'm blinded. The nipple
piercings
with the little heart.
The clitoral piercing.
No, it's not even just that. There's a lot of piercings.
It's like an Iron Maiden. And so, like, I get it. The author likes it. I don't understand why. Not only does Rowan love it, but she had gotten them without him knowing. So it's like they just both randomly have piercing, like, fetishes. And, like, that's one of the places where I'm like, okay, your kink is showing a little bit, author. But it's not as bad as the rest of this sex scene. Because this starts the part of the book where it's just sex for about 2 hours in the audiobook. No tension, no more character conflict. They're just having sex. He's having sex in an extremely possessive way. Because one thing we haven't really shown up until this point is how much he loves every single thing about her all the time. And the thing is, it insists too much. It does that thing authors do where they like the romance more than the reader. Like, the reader has. There's no foreplay to get the reader into
it.
It
just keeps repeating the same concepts over and over again.
Because again, you should theoretically have always be like a few steps behind the reader in terms of where the reader wants it to be.
At this point, like, it's just also the language. Look, there are some things in a sex scene that, like, just sound okay, and I'm cool with it. And then there are others that make me choke on my own spit. And to call her vagina again, you're poor. I can't do it. You're perfect. I can't do the accent.
Do it. Commit. Commit.
No, I don't know. I literally have, like, an impediment.
Say the words, and then we'll all try.
Okay. You're perfect pussy.
No, it's
perfect pussy.
Yeah, and then how her pussy is, like, won't let him go. It's clenching so
sucking
hard.
Me in.
The hungry cunt.
She does that too, which is weird. At one point, I thought she was going to be like, oh, and he's inside me. And it was like, no, he's in my pussy. And I'm just like, I don't know why I said it like I'm from the country. But, like, there's just a lot of that. And, like, look, everyone has said dumb things when they're having sex or sexting. And, like, it's fine because both of you are essentially high on hormones.
I'm not allowed to dirty talk because it's cheesy, apparently.
The thing is, that is in a personal context. In a book, it's going to come off very dumb in a lot of ways, and it's just not built up. Again, if this is your thing, it will fit you, but everybody else's thing doesn't quite. It feels silly. Again, I go back to the fact that he's like, pick a safe word, and it's like, you're a serial killer. Why would you care about consent this much?
It's not even just that, because it's a very specific... To jump into that when he's been pining over her this whole time. It's like, I get the hungry sex, but to go straight to safe word needing, I think is a drastic jump.
Again, why wouldn't you just have sex the first time? Why does it have to be a game?
It's because he has to be safe. He has to be comforting. He has to be emotionally available to her.
That's not that, though. This is like a weird... I get what you're saying.
Of course.
I get it.
Yes, I get it.
Because TikTok believes that if there's a safe word, it means he cares about me. And not like, well, what are we going to do that we might need a safe word, Betty? What's going on?
That we haven't talked about or set parameters of what you're okay with. Where are your lines? Oh, I'm going to discover. Because the thing that people don't realize about a safe word is you're not supposed to have something new spring up that you're unaware could happen. And it's a safe word is there if you are suddenly in a place, because a safe word can be used during something that you have done before, but in this moment, you are just not mentally handling, or it hurts more this time, and that's where a safe word should come up. Or if you have talked about, hey, this will be a session with surprises, or like some things could happen, if any particular little thing should happen, you know, here it is. There's supposed to be communication beforehand. You don't just go into sex and be like, during, already starting, what's your safe word in case I do something outside of your consent?
Also, he doesn't even do anything all that wild.
No, he edges her.
That is not rough core sex, okay? I was expecting, like, full-on, like, wildness.
Knife play?
That's in Den of Vipers.
I want her to rope him up. Like, I wanted a scene where he was just in a tapestry of...
That would make so much sense.
What is that thing called?
Shibari.
I want her to shibari him up. Like, and for him to be, it is one of the only moments in his life that he lets go of control. Here, he is someone who is constantly in control at the restaurant, who has to be the decision maker, who has to do all of this stuff. And in this moment,
Maria,
he is like, she's like, I want to do this.
She is fucking the thing that she usually kills. And like, yes, in that moment, in a very like Hannibal-esque way.
But they have to have that whole trope. It's like, she's always in control, so she must relinquish control because she's been in control of their whole, even though he's been holding back this whole time and all this stuff. So it's like, I get what they were doing. It doesn't work with the rest of it. Because it just ignores his whole characterization, I think. But yeah, they were like, no, the powerful man must be the one asking for safe word and all this stuff versus relinquishing control.
Serial killers tend to be kind of sexually pathetic. And so, like, I understand we can't do this because it's a romance. But it's more realistic that he would finish in, like, 3 seconds or be into some kind of a weird thing where he just, like, watches and jerks. Like, there's a lot of ways that serial killers have weird sexual issues that aren't hot. And I understand why the book can't do that because it is... fat material, but that is a more interesting place it could go, and I just want to note that.
The ending is kind of like an insane rush towards the happy ending rom-com, and then just, because basically what ends up happening is once they have sex, they decide they're going to give this a real try, and they're going to move in together. She's just going to move into his house, and then he surprises her by opening a restaurant that's Butcher and Blackbird, the two names, which, sorry, the FBI is at the door. The FBI is at the door at this moment. He's literally known as the Butcher of Boston or whatever it's called. Like, he is the door, FBI.
There's a knife theme inside.
Oh, he got a tattoo of her drawing, by the way. We find out during the sex scene.
Wish fulfillment, left, right, center.
But then also, as they move in together, he pulls back excessively because the restaurant is just taking so much out of him because David is fucking things up, but we don't know that yet. And so she feels neglected. And so then he's there alone one day because he's going to make dinner with her. And then all of a sudden, David's just been left there. The guy that was supposed to give David a ride to his, like, his living home is not there. And so David was just left there, going to be left there all weekend alone because he can't take care of himself. And so he's like, oh, I'll drive you over, like, whatever. And then a Blackbird calls, or no, someone else calls. Anyway, David knocks him out. David knocks Rowan out. Okay, just knocks him right out, ties him to a chair.
And tells him, you have to, oh no, there is a phone call, because, no, she's coming. Sloane is coming, and he's like, the orb weaver is on it. So, like, David is like, haha.
Oh yeah, there's a gun. No, he has a gun, because then he talks to her.
He tells Rowan, you need to get her to leave, otherwise I will shoot you or her.
But he already says, I'm going to kill you both, so you better get rid of her now before I kill her first.
She comes in and Rowan has to do the whole, I didn't even love you. You're unlovable. You're a psycho. God. You're nuts.
We were crazy to think this was going to work. You're unhinged. You're deranged. Like, there's something fucking wrong with you.
It was so unbelievable. I don't, like, I get why she, like, crumbles because it is, like, trauma and stuff, and it's been sold that way. No, but I just don't believe her being dumb enough to, like, buy all that after everything.
We have never had a story about how she has tried to make connections with people and she has struggled to do so because she felt unlovable. Like, this is such an informed trauma trait because, again, we don't hear about how she's tried to date, but, you know, people are off put by her, that besides Lark, everyone she's tried to make friends with.
The other person who literally knows she's a serial killer is still her best friend and still loves her and still treats her like a sister. Like, there's no reason for her to think she's unlovable.
And she mentions herself that she actually likes to be alone, and a lot of the reason she doesn't have a lot of people in her life is her choosing. So the idea that him just being like, you're a psycho and unlovable wouldn't be her, like, oh no. So anyway, she rushes home,
starts packing,
and decides that she's getting on a flight. She's gonna go as the hottest version of herself. She talks to Lark, and as she's going over the conversation with Lark, she realizes that he hid some secrets and some codes in what he said, and basically that leads her to realize, oh my god, David is actually not lobotomized and he's in trouble. So she turns on her cameras because she's cameraed up his restaurant,
because of course she did.
That's how she figures out it's David.
She sees him being tortured, So she rushes over.
She called the brother and like organized something or like, oh, I need your help with this.
No, that was to get information on who David actually was because she didn't actually know who he was.
She goes in pretending that she, as much as David has been looking into her and fascinated with her, she goes in pretending she's been into David and she's known the whole time, which she needed Rowan's brother's government connections to find out who he was.
I don't know why she would assume that would work, though.
I don't know either.
There's no reason to assume that would work.
How on earth would you connect David, like just an image of David, to serial killer? Because, like, if the government had his name, wouldn't they have arrested him ages ago? Like, it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, that's what I thought it was, because that's why David goes to be with Thurston, because he knew she was tracking him, but not him. She knew he was tracking his kills, is what my understanding was.
Yeah.
So she was just like, oh, now I'm putting two to two together. This guy I was tracking, which was not conveyed well enough, but this guy that I was tracking was actually him this whole time. And then that's where we get the info dump of like, oh yeah, I pretended to be Thurston's little like boy toy to help.
But also it just makes no sense why she would have to call his brother for that. Cause that's, it is told to us that she called.
She did not know that David was that person. So she had Lachlan. Now how he did this, I don't have the logic behind this, but
that's my point.
She called Lachlan to magical FBI information dump to find, oh, David's not David. David's actually what's his face? David so-and-so.
But that's my point. If the government had his name, how is he not arrested? I don't give a shit about her investigating him.
There's just nothing explained. There's no detective work.
You have to build the logic of this scene.
Yeah.
She gets there and she's like, I was tracking you. I don't like this guy at all. Let's run off and kill someone together. And then she's like, ha-cha! And she knifes him and she kills him. And then her and Rowan have like a little argument where she was like, I can't, but I am.
Well, Rowan is bleeding out tied to a chair because David has been cutting off chunks of flesh and eating it.
She was like, I'm not unlovable. And he's like, I am bleeding. Can we do this later?
I knew you would understand. I am not unlovable. Okay, you didn't understand.
And so then, like, everything's fine. And then we jump to a scene where they're doing their next killing together, except this time they're doing it together. They weren't competing, even though the entire time they basically did it together and weren't working alone. So whatever. And he was like, wow, you really fucked up how you gouged this eye out. And she's like, I don't gouge eyes.
Oh my God.
And then she goes,
oh God,
and it's a little package that she unwraps, and it has a note that was him, I don't know, a to-do list he had for himself. And she was like, let me rewrite. He's like, oh, I have to add something to that to-do list. And then she's unwrapping this other thing. And he's like, wait, read this first. And it was like, ask Sloan to marry me? Question mark. And then she opens it and it's a ring. And she's like, did you put a ring inside this guy's eye socket and propose to me on a sticky note? And she's like, no, it's perfect. So they get married. Lark and his brother have apparently maybe slept with each other.
Oh, no, he gets a blackbird tattoo.
No, it's the tattoo to cover the scars that he got on his chest. Oh, he has a bunch of scars. Okay. He has a bunch of scars. He gets a tattoo, but this one has color. And she's like, it has color. It's beautiful. And she was the tattoo artist. And like, actually, it was her. Because what we haven't mentioned at all, because it doesn't affect anything, is that she hasn't been able to use art outside of sketching because of the trauma she went through back when she was at the school, but now she can use color again, and that's the end. It's the end.
Oh, no, we get an epilogue where we're like, oh, there's a second serial killer. It's the brother of David, and the brother of David's like, since you killed my brother, I'm gonna kill your brother. Thus, we get the enemy for the second book.
Okay, as you can tell, this book is kind of a mess. I think I understand why it's popular. There's a good hook. It's nerd girl wish fulfillment, and the voice actors are really good. I get it. There are certain books that are popular that I don't understand or are kind of inexplicable, but I do kind of get this one. Amanda, closing thoughts.
I mean, I think it is what it is. You get what you get. You don't throw a fit. If you want just like, I wouldn't even call this like, it's kind of weird because as far as the sex goes, I wouldn't even classify this as like the dark romance style that like TikTok is obsessed with. It's like, it is just smut. They happen to be serial killers, really. Cause like there is other books like Haunting Adeline, mm-hmm. whatever it is, you know, Den of Vipers, where very clearly that's a dark romance. There is twisted shit happening regarding the relationship, regarding the sex. That is not happening. The sex itself, outside of like the piercings, really, and occasionally needing a safe word, I guess, it's pretty tame. It could be worse. You know?
Oh, it's incredibly tame other than the porn.
So like overall, I mean, I think it's fine. you know, like, but it's like, it could it be better? Yes. And it's like, if you just want to turn your brain off for a little bit and be like, serial killers in a rom-com, let's go, you know, there you go.
I was not listening to it painfully until the porn started. Like, until that point, yeah. I was like, this is not good, but it's also not painful in the way some of the books we've read have been truly painful to read. All right, so Amanda needs to head out because she is...
working today.
I work on weekends.
She needs to make a living so that I can make a living. Yeah. But it was very nice having her here. She should come on more than, like, once every 2 years, but getting the schedules working is tough.
TikTok needs to have obsessive weird books, and then I will come on more.
Next time you pick the book we're gonna do, and then we'll be forced to read it.
Ooh.
I feel like you'd pick something fun, so I'm up for that.
Have you guys done Morning Glory Milking Farm?
We have not.
I don't want to.
He actively doesn't want to do that book.
I don't even. I don't want to.
Mink will read it.
Thank you for having me. Goodbye. Subscribe to Swell Entertainment. Okay, bye.
and us, if you're still here. So my final thoughts are this. Again, I am not the audience of this book, but I think as a rom-com, it could have been funnier and it could have been more romantic. It needed more tension across the board. Romantic tension. It needed horror and or thriller tension. That was none. But if you like porn, that is this style of porn, you'll probably, and if you don't care, like if you're okay with the two of them liking each other immediately and being sexually attracted to each other immediately, and it taking 4 years, which takes up very little page space, it doesn't feel like 4 years, you'll like this book. But it's not great. It's, again, it wasn't until the porn the most painful, but I didn't love it.
It's just a lot of penis, you know, like it's just there's a lot of coitus. And that's fine. It made me uncomfortable while I was listening to it in the middle of my workplace, which is a very quiet office where everyone's typing on computers, and I'm just sitting there hearing, he entered my pussy. And I'm just like, And then as it progresses, I get even more uncomfortable because I'm just like, I'm genuinely listening to pornography at work. I need to actually just turn this off and listen to music right now. I can't focus.
I had to listen to this. Poor Christopher. I was listening to the majority of this while we were putting floors in. I had my headphones in. So he wasn't having to listen to it, but every once in a while he'd hear me go, "Oh, why?" Or like, "No," or like, "Can this be over?"
I almost hit the sidewalk at one point in downtown because I was trying to avoid traffic, and it started the first sex scene, and I was so shocked by the language and how like crass it was, because it hadn't been crass prior to that all that much.
Very loving prior, and then all of a sudden he's like real controlling during sex, and he hasn't expressed himself as a controlling person at all.
And also just it's gross. It's really gross stuff, but not for like, it's just gross for almost like, no, like I just, as a human being, I don't think I could write a sex scene, even for a romantic comedy, and use the hard P word. Like, I hate using that word in a sex scene. Anyway, so that being said, going back, final sentence of my thoughts. It's fine. It's whatever. It's not a good book, but if you want a fun book, there's lots of fun books. So go read it if you want some fun.
More than anything, I kind of just wish we could have read the version that was actually about the synergization of romance.
Yep.
Killing. Like, that to me just sounds so interesting, and like, that's just not what's here. And I think again I talked about this a little bit. I think this is sort of a limitation of chick lit, in that like, you can only get so much with this style of prose and need for banter and tropes, that you can't really do anything like transcendent with it. Yep. You can't. And I'm realizing that more and more, in terms of like, certain genres are just very locked in how good they can get. Like, new YA versus old YA. Old YA could get really good. New YA struggles to be even competent most of the time. And it can't quite get there. Maybe I'll talk about that more later, because it's like, it's an idea that's sort of slowly percolating in my mind about genres. Okay, if you guys would like to see more guests on the podcast, pressure us in the comments. Are there people you would like to see as guests? Should we pressure Amanda to do this more than once every 2 years?
2 years.
Okay, we love you, our parasocial darlings.
Bye.